Let's change the way we do the world. Let's nurture habits that lead to better habitats and a more sustainable future for all. Get started at OttomanNatureInstitute.org/action.
Bring your family to meet ours at Audubon Zoo and Audubon Aquarium, where you can rule the day with Arnold, flip out with Midas, get chummy with Ace, and of course, hang out with Rue. Get your tickets today at OttomanNatureInstitute.org.
At Ochsner Hospital for Children, we understand that accidents and illnesses happen. Our 24/7 pediatric ER has you covered no matter what unexpected moments life throws your way. Visit Ochsner.org/4children to learn more.
Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Do you know what ultra-premium ice cream is? Well, in order to qualify for an ultra-premium ice cream, you have to have more than 16% milk fat. This is commonly described as a dense, rich, creamy, heavenly, sumptuous, decadent, indulgent ice cream. And our pals, friends, and partners over at New Orleans Ice Cream Company has the most delicious ice cream you could ever imagine. I mean, let's say Bananas Foster, go for it. Chocolate City, go for it. Mardi Gras, King Cake, go for it. They have the Po' Boys, which is like their own rendition of an ice cream sandwich. Okay, it's two different ways. You can get it with the vanilla bean or the Creole cream cheese. And it's this kind of like very soft cookie situation that sandwiches. It's called the Po' Boy, and you gotta try it out. Y'all, you can find New Orleans Ice Cream Company around the country, but also at our Rouse's, our dear friends, and other grocery stores all around. You try it out. And guess what? When you're not in New Orleans and you're trying some of that Bananas Foster or that King Cake, it'll transport you in some sort of way vicariously. NewOrleansIceCreamCompany.com. Nola Papa is proudly sponsored by Rouse's Markets. You'll love us for more than just the low prices. Make shopping easy with pickup and delivery. Everyday low prices, unbeatable quality, family-owned delivery and pickup options. We buy local services, catering, and bakery. And that Gentilly Berry cake in that case is so fine. Oh, y'all, you know the Gentilly Berry cake. Oh, find it at Rouse's Markets. We interrupt this regular programming to say that over on our website at nolapapa.com, we have the biggest deal we've ever done, and it's half off both our books, The Secret Mermaid Review and The Adventures of Addie Underwater. You can find them all across New Orleans, Target.com, Amazon, but only at nolapapa.com can you get it signed and half off. I don't know how long it's going to be there as to I see fit. Right now, it's good as gold. So at checkout for Addie, put in Addie 50. And for The Secret Mermaid Review, put in Secret 50 at checkout. And let me know when you did, okay? Just tell Nola Papa. Tag it.
Hey there, Nola Papa fans. This is Nick from Sandpiper Vacations. At Sandpiper Vacations, we specialize in making dreams come true. Who doesn't love a fabulous vacation? Picture yourself in Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Disney Cruise Line. We are your ticket to the Disney dream. But hold on, it's not just about Mickey and Minnie. We're talking about Universal Studios, Sandals, all-inclusive resorts, and cruise lines like Royal Caribbean and Virgin Voyages. And that's just the beginning. Guess what? Booking your dream vacation doesn't cost you anything extra to use our services. We are here to give you that added value to booking your vacation. Sometimes we can save you some money. We'll save you time. We'll save you the stress and take out that hassle of booking your dream vacation. So head on over to sandpipervacations.com, click on Get a Quote, and let your adventure begin. Make sure you mention that Nola Papa sent you.
This is Adrian Sosby, your freelance content creator and editor of the Nola Papa podcast. From corporate videos to compelling documentaries, podcast production to engaging reels, I bring creative energy to your business. Plus, I specialize in YouTube management, helping you grow your channel and reach new heights. Let's collaborate. Contact me at 404-247-1083 or visit solidicemedia.com to see examples of my work.
Life is so much more than a blog. It's also unafraid, unique, and unscripted. A Nola Papa podcast.
Mr. Mayor, I am going to talk about the past, because you are New Orleans' youngest mayor, or at least that's what I have come across.
At the time, I was 35 when I began my campaign. I turned 36 at the moment of inauguration, and I knew I was young. I didn't want anybody to say I was young, because sometimes they were trying to use it against you.
Sure.
You know, they're trying to dig at you a little bit, but my time as mayor was one of the great experiences of my life, and mainly because I love New Orleans and I love its people and everything about it, its culture, its people, and you know, its challenges and its problems. And so I work every day to improve the city, make it better, make it more equitable, make it more progressive, make it more jobs, safer. I mean, it was really an obsession. To be honest with you. And I think you have to approach the job in that way in 21st century America. Being the mayor of a major American city is one of the great jobs. It's also one of the difficult jobs.
Sure.
You know, because it's every problem is yours, even if you didn't make it, even if you can't control it, even if you can't solve it, but it's yours.
It falls in your lap.
Right.
Around the time you were embarking on your second term, which he won by like 80%, y'all. Okay. I'm from Mississippi. I'm a New Orleanian by way of South Mississippi. And I knew in 2000 when I graduated that I was not going to be a Mississippian all my life. I hit the ground running. I didn't know where I was going, but I knew that I didn't feel accepted and loved like I should be in Mississippi. And I went down the road, and down that road led me to New Orleans in 2001. And that was kind of the, you know, the parting, the last 2 years of your time as mayor in New Orleans. And I didn't know much about you because I was a kid. However, I stayed here and I've gotten to really know, not personally, but from the outside looking in, I saw the other mayors that came after you. And one thing that I just have so much respect is you're also the first Black mayor, or maybe
My dad was actually the first African American.
Right,
mayor.
For 50 years, like it was exactly. And not only the youngest, but your daddy and then you, what's really neat about being younger is there's a nuance and there is an exciting feeling of I can only imagine of you wanting to help, you know, and with, we trucked along, New Orleans is a rare bird in the cities of America. And I knew when I got here that this was my city. And I I paid attention. I learned from my mistakes. And as I grew, I kept learning from my mistakes. But as I also grew older, I saw other mayors that took place in New Orleans, and I wasn't too keen.
Yeah.
It was almost like your work ethic and the way that you viewed things kind of changed a little bit.
I think when you're elected mayor, when you're given a big responsibility, people expect a lot of you, and you have to be willing to make sacrifices. And that sacrifice is you sacrifice personal time, you sacrifice some personal privacy, you sacrifice some things. And, you know, it's an 8-year run, and you've got to be heavily focused. I never thought that becoming mayor was some sort of prize, you know, or some sort of emolument, or some sort of crown. I viewed it, you know, very differently. And I also viewed it as an opportunity, and from how I'd grown up in there, how I see, that I wanted to make sure that every community was affirmed, respected, and participating. And people, I would always tell people, you know, my governing style started with what I believed in my values. You know, it was influenced by political ideology and thought. That wasn't my starting point, right? My starting point was as a son of the city and the people of the city. And I grew up knowing all kinds of people, you know, and, you know, New Orleans is a place of personalities, characters, you know, idiosyncrasies. And I always viewed that as part of the city's great strength, that it was indeed that way. And I also think that, you know, the city has a lot of challenges. And when I took office, there was a considered view, heavy crime, we had economic decline. It was a considered view by someone who said, well, this guy's nice and he's energetic, but he really can't solve any of these problems. And for me, it put a chip on my shoulder, to be honest. I felt like, okay, we're going to do something. And that doing something may require us to be somewhat disruptive, change some things, shake some things up. And that's kind of how I view things. I said, I'm going to shake some things up. But I was also focused on coalition building, which was, look, I'm going to listen and give everybody a chance. But, you know, we're going to make some decisions here. We're not going to be bogged down. But we're going to also have a big table, right? A big room where everyone can participate. And I did some interesting things on a symbolic basis. Like I completely, you know, the mayor always gave this Mardi Gras ball. And every other mayor would have it, and they'd be giving out invitations and trying to decide who was going to come and who was not going to come. And I basically said, man, the hell with that. I said, I'm inviting everybody who wants to come to come. And, you know, we did it at the convention center, then we did it at the arena. And I would always joke, I said, you know, I got everybody here. I said, because this represents me, right? And it represents the city, right? I said, you know, you want to go to an exclusive mine? It was symbolic in some sense, because I just abhorred kind of a snobbery kind of a mindset. You know, this is for us, and you need an invitation for me. And I said, you know what? And I got the press asked me, hey, do this big Mardi Gras ball. I said, you know what? This is different. If you want to go to an exclusive Mardi Gras ball, you have a big choice. I said, this is being paid for by the taxpayers, not by donors and corporate sponsors. And therefore, the public should be able, anyone who wants to come with a good attitude and have a good time should come. So we end up having 10,000 people, right? And when I tell you, you know, a New Orleans extravaganza with people from all walks of life, that's exactly what it was. And it represented a little bit of how I wanted to govern, which was to help people understand that there's a way and a role for everyone to be able to participate, everyone to be a part. So yeah, it was a party, but it was open and in that way. And you know, that New Orleans is a challenging place because we've got a lot of race, class, neighborhood stratifications always swirling around. And I'm never naive to that. But I always believed that people had so much more in common in a place like New Orleans than even they realized, right? And that was a governing philosophy. And I brought a lot of people in to the administration. I brought a lot of communities in that had never really been involved in a very big way. And it was, I told people, I said, I didn't need to be, no one had to come push me to do some of the, it was my conviction. And some of my conviction was also experimentation. I'm gonna try to do some things a little differently. It might not work, and it might work. And most of it worked. Whereas sometimes traditionally say, you can't do that, or you can't do. I said, well, you know what? We're gonna try something a little different. We're gonna do some things a little bit differently, because I think it's what the times demand and the times require.
Absolutely, and you gave people a seat at the table. You know, like in other, excuse me, other people that's never had that. I mean, the amount of respect that gives someone that's never been able to even open their mouth about, the way things should go. And you gave them a seat at the table. And not only that, but while you were in office, crime dropped 50%.
Oh, it dropped. We dropped it down. We brought it down. And it was a lot of hard work, but it was a community, wide effort. I mean, we expanded the police department. We upgraded the police department. We changed the way we police. But then we put a lot of resources into youth programs and summer jobs and, cultural programming. And, my whole mentality was we got to focus on giving young people something to do, right?
Sure.
We got to focus on scalability. You got to have one or two little programs. You got to have scalability. And I said, let's try it. We did midnight basketball. We did starlight basketball, which was for girls, right? Because we realized early on, about a year in, we had a bunch of youth and we had them around in a round table. And, I asked them, I said, okay, what is it we aren't doing? And the girls said in unison, you don't have enough programs for girls. All this stuff supports. I said, that's a point well made. The recreation director, Angel Wilson, said, I'm going to go hire a women's director whose only job is going to be is to create programs for girls. So we did that, right? But I have to tell you, because these young girls came in and told us that, right? And when we had a conversation with the young people, I told myself, I said, I want to talk to the young people, not have you talk to them and then you tell me what they said. I want them around. I just want to hear the 45 minutes or an hour. I just need to listen to what they have to say. And they said, we're bored. You don't have enough things to do. Okay. You don't have enough programs for girls. And they said, well, all of us are not athletes. We all don't want to play sports. Some of us want, okay, so we put an outdoor program together. We put a music program together. We put an art program together, right? We said, let's go find, every kid's got something they want to do. Right. And so let's be a little bit more broad. It's not just about baseball and basketball and softball. It is also about a lot of other things. So we invested heavily in youth programs. We put this curfew in place, which was very controversial a little bit at the time, but very popular with parents. Right. And we did it, but we did it in a way where young people who violated it didn't get a record. Hmm. We just took them to a curfew center, which was like a community center, called their parents, come pick your kid up. You know, we did some things, you know, we did a curfew, but it was different. So we're not going to, you know, keep records. Right? That's not the purpose of this. And it helped because we created an atmosphere, a curfew. We had activities. We changed the policing philosophy to being much more proactive. Officers on the street, officers in the neighborhood, officers getting to know the people in the community. You know, we had to make a lot of changes in policing. We had to fire 70, 80 police officers for ineptitude, corruption, and the like. I had a great police chief by the name of Richard Pennington, you know, who came in and was a great partner with us. It was the kind of things that we did. And I tell people, I don't know if that would work today, but I share it because I learned a lot of what I learned by listening, reading to others, the mayors, the officials. You know, now in a lot of cities, you have gang problems. Well, you know, lots of cities are trying gang intervention. If I were running New Orleans, I'd work heavily on let's try some gang intervention. Let's try some things. You know, you cannot be stuck with doing what you're doing if it isn't working. You have to try to do, and that's a rule in politics, government, business, you know, academia. And then I put a lot of emphasis on the cultural economy. I love the arts, I love the music. The creative element of New Orleans is as strong as any city in the world. And you've got so many artists of all type in New Orleans, highly professional artists, street artists, community artists, you know, painters, graphic designers, musicians, writers, you name it, right? So I'm like, this is an economy. So let's take our festivals, Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, make them stronger, make them bigger. Let's create something new. We created Essence and Satchmo Fest, right? Let's focus on the movie industry. We focused on the movie industry, got the state to create tax credits, went on a big trip to Hollywood to try to promote things. Let's focus on that, the port, right? The port was important. I told the port director, what do you need? How can I help? Let's partner to make things happen. This port is important to this city, right? I knew the city needed to be cleaned up. You know, we went out and created these cleanup crews. We went out and bought street sweeping equipment. We went out and bought all new garbage cans. We put a whole community program together with ads to help clean up the city. I mean, the whole idea was how to be an active administration and an active mayor to mobilize and partner and collaborate with people in the community to do some very basic things, housing. You know, we couldn't fix the housing problem, but we got the banks, developers, the community leaders, public housing residents, got them together, helped them. You know, we had to work through some difficult issues at times, right? To get everyone on a same page, right? And so, though, you know, that kind of work, you know, I, you know, value learning by watching others, by reading others, by hearing from others. You know, it's a great way to learn. You know, I had ideas. I said, boy, people come and give me an idea. I'm like, that's a great idea. I think I'll put my name on it, right? I'll put my name on it, even right. though maybe it's not. And part of what you do as a mayor and as a leader, other people have great ideas and you help them operationalize.
Yes.
Because it's a good idea for the city. It's good for the neighborhood. Hey, this neighborhood needs X. I went out to a neighborhood one time. A kid had gotten shot. I went out there. I just got to, like, a damn basketball goes down. There was glass everywhere. I said, I'm not going to tolerate this. I said, I'm going to put some playground equipment here. I'm going to put some basketball goals up. I'm going to get somebody out here to clean this damn place up tomorrow. Tomorrow, yes. We're going to do it. And I'm going to come back in 3 days and make sure it gets done. I mean, you know, I had to change the mindset also that we're going to respond to problems where we can. We're going to solve problems where we're not going to sit back and say, oh, we'll wait for this department. No, I'm telling the department, go do it now.
Yes.
Right? I'm telling the department to go make it happen now. And that kind of leadership is contagious.
Yes, it is.
Just like foot dragging and procrastinating is contagious.
Yes.
Action and activism is contagious.
Ooh, he's giving me, okay. He's giving me goosebumps.
Yeah. Contagious, right?
Yes.
Let's make it happen. And you know, if it doesn't work, it will not be because we didn't put the effort in, because we didn't try, because we didn't push. And that was, you know, my philosophy, you know, in leading the city. And I watched some of the great mayors of New Orleans, and my father was mayor, Lou Landry was mayor. I saw them, you know, when I was growing up, and, you know, they were activist oriented, they were impatient, you know, kind of guys. And I realized, you know, you have to have a little bit of, you have to be impatient and have some charm as well, but you got to be impatient. You know, you got to have a sense of urgency to make things move in a city like New Orleans.
It's like molasses, you know?
Yeah.
It's that golden beauty of molasses. Now, you brought about change in such an exciting way. And you brought people to the table. You had crime drop with your whole team, administration, everybody hitting the ground running. Now, we're in you're celebrating a milestone of time from when you first put your name in the hat,
yeah,
right?
It's been 30 years since will be 30 years since I was inaugurated. It seems like only yesterday. I'll be back in New Orleans in July because the National Urban League's annual conference is in New Orleans this year.
Oh, cool.
I'm planning a little reunion event. It hasn't come together quite yet, but you know, it'll be we'll do a reunion event. We'll try to encourage lots of people from the community because, you know, I want to celebrate, I like to celebrate the fact and underscore the fact that, you know, we built a lot of energy, but a lot of it was getting people to basically fix their own city. Mm. No, it wasn't just governments. We have to get people to fix the city and you know, get people working on behalf of their own community.
Yes, and want to have pride in it. You know,
pride. And you got leadership can imbue pride. What I learned is people like New Orleans like one of their family members. So that means, you know, 3 days a week they're in love and 2 days a week they're in hate. You know, you're like your family member. I'm so mad with that. And we have to, you know, understand New Orleans is at a crossroads once again.
Yes.
Almost 20 years after Katrina, we're coming out of COVID. The city is in a competitive environment, but with, you know, Nashville and Austin and Houston and Dallas, you can't rest on yesterday.
Right.
You can't just sit on the history alone. You have to build the new city.
Yes.
And new city is the old city plus.
Yes.
And that requires you to think different, do things different. I hope that the leaders of the city will be imaginative, you know, forward thinking, forward leaning.
Yes.
In their thought processes, right? And my commitment to all the business and electeds is whatever I can ever do to assist, to help, to encourage, I'm going to be there as long as your intentions are correct.
Yes.
Right. And I'm I love the city dearly. I still consider it my home, even though I don't. The work I've had the chance to do at the National Urban League has been heavily influenced by being mayor of New Orleans. I mean, here I've taken an organization that was proud but kind of stuck in yesterday and, you know, made it one of the leading civil rights nonprofits in the country. We're building a new headquarters building. We increased the size of our budget by 5 times. We're reaching 3 to 4 times as many people through our programs. You know, we have an important voice on the national stage. We built that same, but it's the same philosophy, right?
Exactly.
Folks on a team, I have people like, oh, okay, my job is to create directions, create some strategy, create some focus, but I have all these folks, they're doing the work, you know? But they're doing it because they believe it. And that's really, you know, how we, you know, how we've had. So I've no job in the world. I'll tell this to any, even the president, the hardest job is the presidency of the United States. The second hardest job is being mayor of a major American city. And after that, everything else may seem hard, but isn't hard, you know, because you have to, you know, it's tough when you become mayor and, you know, you have to attend funerals. It's tough to deal with some of the tragedies. Sometimes you have the excitements. It's tough to sometimes wake up in the morning and say, oh my goodness, that, you know, at 6:45 in the morning is a problem that 20 minutes ago you didn't think you'd have to deal with. And when you pick up the newspaper, you listen to the radio, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be dealing with this today.
Right.
You know, you have that that element of the job. And so you can't be a shrinking violet. You have to be cut out for some of this, you know, back and forth, you know, in a very, very real way. And, you know, I just, truly, have appreciated the opportunity and to serve the people in New Orleans. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being back this summer for our annual conference and chance to reconnect with a lot of people and encourage people. New Orleans is one of the great cities
in the world.
Let me tell you, you go to the governor of Louisiana years ago, went to Japan. He stood up in front of a group of Japanese businessmen and said, I'm the governor of Louisiana. They looked at him polite, said, I'm from New Orleans. They all clapped. I was in Prague, Czech Republic, and was there for a conference. And they said, let me take you over to meet the mayor of Prague. Of course, I couldn't speak his language. He couldn't speak mine. We had a translator. I went in and said, oh, I'm the mayor of New Orleans. He gets excited. He says, stay here. He runs in the back. He comes out with a new. On the front page of the newspaper was a picture of Louis Armstrong playing in the Central Square of Prague in like 1966.
Wow.
And, you know, he was all excited. I'm thinking, man, this is New Orleans. He immediately, Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
Immediately associated with jazz. I said, you know, the reach of this city is universal. The affection that people have is universal. You know, maybe Paris, maybe New York, maybe London, you know, maybe, you know, equate, but not, maybe Rio, right? But not a lot of places equate with the emotion and the sense of culture and history that New Orleans generates.
It's unlike anything in the world. And you guys, we're talking to Mr. Mayor Mark Morial. He is taking the time to talk to us about then and now. And, you know, I question you, Mr. Mayor, where we are today and the nuance that you brought yesterday. Where can we go today? You know, because it's, the administration's different. The everybody's different. It feels like the game, like the plan is just completely different from the way that you took to the streets. And you know, the crime is really bad. I feel like that the city is in kind of in an angry mode because there's so many different things, like whether it's the streets and like, you know, the infrastructure or, you know, corruption or crime, people or insurance. I'm not sure if you know about how bad the insurance situation is here.
My mom lives there, and I really think you know, this is something that the new governor should be focused on exclusively.
Yes.
And not focused on some of the things he's focused on. But this is an issue that touches all Louisianians, all homeowners, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, region of the state. Hey, fix this problem. Figure it out. Come up with a creative solution. We understand a lot of this is because of weather changes, climate changes. We understand why, but the job of leaders is to solve and try.
Yes.
To solve problems. And, you know, it may require some commitment by the state to function as a reinsurer of sorts, you know, to backstop some of this. I don't really know, but I've not heard, you know, proposals. Maybe there are.
I haven't heard them.
This.
It's scary, but because we want to live here, Mr. Mayor. We want to live right here. We want to thrive. Mm-hmm. And when we open the bills, whether it's insurance or whether it's property tax, it is increasing so much to where me and my husband are I don't think we're going to move. And it's sad that I have to say I don't think. I would like to say we're not moving. But when it comes to the bottom line and the amount of money that our New Orleanians are having to spend just to live in a home, it's scary. And I do hope that the governor and whoever he brings to the table are able to come up with a solution, because it's not just New Orleans, it's all around the country. In the coastal areas, and we've got to do something or we're going to be put out. And it's scary because you have people that really love New Orleans, and it almost feels like we don't have a choice. You know, the violent crimes, I love how you opened the basketball courts at nighttime, because we have these kids, you know, that's not really being controlled by their parents, and they go out and they do bad stuff, real bad stuff, and then there's damage control. And if we had those kind of things that you had at the helm in the beginning, I think that we would be different. You know, we would be in a different spot. I question. From one mayor to another mayor, what would you say to maybe help, you know, because you are smart. And
I used to use advisory committees and task forces to help me solve problems. Mm-hmm. So one, if you're dealing with the issues of youth and crime, you can't always solve the problem with your staff sitting around. You have to bring in a process. So, you know, you bring in some of the experts, youth serving experts, social workers in psychology, recreation experts, and you say, look, I would like for you to take 60 days to make a recommendation to me, make some recommendations to me. Let's figure out how we can solve. Maybe what I'm thinking is not right. Maybe what I'm thinking is right. You know, you use the citizens and utilize the citizens and get them involved in problem solving, which is a way of government, right? You don't believe that every problem is just your staff or you coming up with an idea. And you know, some of the challenges are post-COVID driven, You know, people come out of COVID, they're in a funky mood. Understand like the hookie rate, the not go to school rate across the country is as high as it's ever been, because some of these kids don't just, the whole idea of it being normal to go to school every day has slipped away. Mm. But there's lots of ways to utilize the citizens, get some ideas. You know, the electeds, what do electeds have to realize? If you don't do a good job, you get voted out. If you're term limited, you won't get voted out because you can't serve anymore, but you'll be disliked for the rest of your life. Or you have critics who say, you know, when you had a chance to do something, you couldn't produce. And I lived in complete fear, not fear, but great concern that I'm going to do a good job. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity to make a difference. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to try to solve some problems. I'm going to stay up all night if I have to solve these problems. You know, I did a fair amount of traveling. I didn't do junkets. You know, all my travel was purposeful. Most of my travel was to Washington and New York, Chicago, Atlanta, sometimes LA, Houston. I went for the business of the city, man.
Yes.
Right? And I don't, you know, it's not to criticize anybody who travels. It's not that. I just felt like I wanted to stay close.
Or first class.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to stay close to the steering wheel.
Yes.
Of government, right? And if I left, I was gone for 2 days, 3 days. It was, you know, and everybody does things differently in terms of, look, but by the time I had gotten to be mayor, I had traveled the world. I'd already been here. I've been to Europe, right, and Asia. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, I get to be mayor. Oh, I've arrived.
Yeah.
I've arrived. No, I haven't. I'm going to leverage on behalf of the city. And I was super duper, you know, focused. And probably at the end, I didn't realize when I finished, I had worn myself down. I was tired. I didn't realize I was so tired when I finished, but it was an important run. And, you know, I always say, when people ask me, I say, I'll let the accomplishments we achieve speak for themselves.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't perfection, but if my successor had an ounce of sense and kept some of what I put in place together, the city would have been far better off. But, you know, my successor was so focused on tearing down what I built without having a new barn to build.
So frustrating.
You can't tear down, but you need a barn. You know, you're going to say, I'm going to tear that barn down, man. I'm going to tear that wooden barn down. I'm going to build a brick one. You can't pull a barn, knock your barn down in 5 years. If you see you, what is that? A lot with grass. Because you didn't build anything. You just, you know, because it was mostly talk, right? And rhetoric, right?
Yeah.
And that is, so I'm going to have to hit another call. Another Zoom.
Hello? Oh, yes, I'm here. Yeah. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, I got to go jump on another Zoom. But this has been a great conversation. And we have a press conference, I think it's May 14th.
Okay.
At the Urban League of Greater New Orleans at 4640 Carrollton to announce. So if you want to come over there, you should come over there.
I'd love to.
And come check out what we're planning to do in July. Yeah. Yeah.
I would make love
sure,
to.
Make can sure I, Tina can I, has all can, your contact information. I'll make sure you get all these notices.
And thank you, Tina, for coordinating this. Real quick, Mr. Mayor, I want to end on this real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're easily the most influential African American I've ever interviewed. Okay, I have a daughter that's African American. Her name is Ella.
How old is Ella?
Ella is 6 years old. She'll be 7 in May.
Oh.
And me and my husband, we have 3 kids. And I knew when I moved from Mississippi that I wanted to become a New Orleanian. I wanted to raise my family here. I want to ask you this with an open heart, because you are very smart and very wise. I want my Ella to grow up in a thriving household that loves her unconditionally. No matter what we look like, we are two white daddies. We love our children more than anything. And one thing that I have found apparent is whether we're in New York or New Orleans, it's happened multiple times. And it's quite perplexing. I don't understand why African Americans come to us in front of her and tear us down. But it's happened 4 or 5 times. And she's getting old enough now to where she's able to put it in place. And we love everyone. That's what I've been taught my whole life. And that's what I teach my children. What can I do? What can me and my husband do to shield her from anger, from miseducation, from things that she has no business being listening to, and it's thrusted in front of everyone and on the street? What can we do as a family
to
hinder us?
So it's disconcerting that people can't see love for what it is. Very disconcerting. And it's hard for me to offer any wisdom, because your daughter, she may catch it from both sides at some point in her life, right?
Sure.
And that is the challenge for her. However, I'm going to tell you that the most important thing is to be in community with other parents like yourself who have mixed race families.
Yes.
Right? We have lots of friends. Michelle and I have a couple of friends, you know, and they have mixed race families, same sex mixed race families. You know, we have a lot of friends who in different configurations. I think you need to find peer support.
Yes.
She needs to find peer support. Other kids like her, because she'll catch it from some African Americans. She might, when she gets older, catch it from whites, mm-hmm. right? And then sort of and you want to build up the strength, because you have to teach her that the hatred is wrong and that love is universal. But you can't, what I'm saying is, I don't think you can do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Right. You need communion and community.
Yes.
I don't know where that community necessarily may be in New Orleans, but it's there. And it's people that have what I call, I call it 21st century families, right? You have families that are different, right? They don't, you know, the traditional old nuclear intact family is more of an exception, you know, rather than a rule. And that would be my best. She needs community.
Yes.
And you and your husband need community too, to give you the support so that you are able to love through the noise.
Yes.
And she's able to affirm who she is through the barbs.
Yeah.
Right? Some people, you know, and in your family, you know, you still have lingering in elements of the community, people who are lingering in their angst, opposition, hostility, meanness to same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. You have people who are hostile to mixed race relationships. Yes. You have people who are hostile to mixed race adoptions.
Yep.
Right? That's the root of it. The root of it is that the country, race has done such a number on us, man. Mm.
Yeah.
Right? That people will not be able to see the love because they're blinded by their own hate or distrust.
Yes.
But, you know, communion, community, is to some extent what you want, right? I would say for every stranger you encounter, who may have hostility, there's 10 people who give you unconditional love. You just may not know them. You may not encounter them. They may not be in your circle yet today. You know, that's the truth, right? And we have some mixed race couples, and they have some challenges socially, right? Because, you know, and we have, you know, same-sex couple friends, and they have, you know, because people are, you know, there's still a lot of hostility.
Yeah.
You know, and I prefer, I don't like to credibilize it, while at the same time acknowledging its reality and its existence. And, you know, your daughter, your children, they're going to have to, you know, you want them to have a strong sense of identity, but at the same time, understand the multicultural, multidimensional world they live in.
Yes.
Right. And the best way is they need to be around kids who may be like them in some ways.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so I'm not by myself.
Right.
I'm odd because I'm not normal. I'm not regular. Right? I'm not regular. Yes, you are. Right? But sometimes kids don't see it that way.
Regular, but so much more complex.
I hope these are helpful.
This is so helpful. And we're just going to keep leading by example and doing the best that we can to be a better human. And I appreciate you, Mr. Mayor, more than you know. You are a light.
Thanks for reaching out.
I sure will, always. And I just, from my family to you and yours, we send you.
The press conference we're going to do in New Orleans, you're going to invite
me. I love it.
You get invited. Okay?
Thank you so much, Tina. All right. Appreciate your help. NOLA love, Mr. Mayor. NOLA love.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, hey, how y'all doing? Are you in the market to buy or sell your home? Or perhaps you're a landlord looking for a top-notch property management service? Well, if that's the case, Steph has got you covered, baby. She is a top-notch performing agent with over 12 years of experience and dedication to providing the best possible service to her clients. She has a niche for understanding her clients' unique needs and finding their perfect place to call home. For sellers, she creates a custom marketing plan that highlights the unique features of the home to get it sold quickly and efficiently. Efficiently. For landlords, she offers top-notch property management services, maximizing investment potential. With Stephanie's knowledge of the market, passion for real estate, feisty for life, and commitment to exceptional service, you can trust that you're in good hands. And trust it, Papa says it. For all your real estate needs, call Steph. So just find her at realestatewithsteph.com. realestatewithsteph.com.
At Ochsner Hospital for Children, we understand that accidents and illnesses happen. Our 24/7 pediatric ER has you covered no matter what unexpected moments life throws your way. Visit ochsner.org/forchildren to learn more.
Well, hello, NOLA Papa listeners. I'm Rob Shear, and I'm the founder of Comfort Cases. As many as you may know, foster care can be a very difficult time. It can be uncertain journeys for every child who enters. And we all must understand that children enter foster care because of choices other people made. I would really love for each and every one of you to visit comfortcases.org to find out how you can truly get involved, whether it's going through volunteering at one of our national centers, or whether maybe you might do a drive or a packing party. There's a way for each and every one of us to make a difference in every single child who enters foster care. You know, together we can give these kids hope, dignity, and we can give them a sense that we can... Together, we can give these kids hope, dignity, and love. Because isn't that what each and every one of us want? So please, listen to NOLA Papas. And I know you're all good humans. And I know that you're going to visit comfortcases.org. Take care. Well, hey, Nola Papa listeners, it's Rob Shear again, the founder of Comfort Cases. You know, I know that each and every one of you are good humans. And for the last 10 years, we have packed over 200,000 comfort cases and have delivered them to all 50 states, DC and Puerto Rico, and have even opened up a center in the United Kingdom. You know, none of this would have not happened without you. Our community. See, each and every one of us must understand something. Your community is not your zip code, my friends. Our community is our human race, and it is up to us to make sure that the 438,000 plus children who are actually sitting in foster care know one thing, and that is they are loved. So continue to visit comfortcases.org and have an amazing day.
Hello, this is Doug Munster. I'm with Gift of Adoption. We provide grants to complete the adoption process of vulnerable children, giving them permanent families and a chance to thrive. If you have ever considered the adoption process or are interested in getting information regarding adoption, please reach out to us at giftofadoption.org. And if you have any particular questions, please go to Instagram and reach out to Real Modern Dads, send us a message, and we'd be glad to help you out in any way and assistance we could in your journey. And again, thank you so much for supporting adoption. We are here to create forever families and help as many families complete the adoption process as we can. Thank you so much, and we really hope to hear from you soon.
Hey everyone, Brian Rosenberg here, founder of Days with Kids. I have exciting news for those hoping to become dads. Until now, determining your best path to fatherhood and then trying to wrap your head around all the moving parts could best be described as overwhelming, complicated, and sometimes downright baffling. But not anymore. In early February, we're launching GWK Academy, a specialized program created specifically for queer men looking to become dads. GWK Academy should be the very first stop on your journey to fatherhood. First, we'll help you determine your best path to fatherhood. Then, whether you choose surrogacy, adoption, or foster care, we'll give you the information, the resources, and the connections you need so you can launch your own journey feeling prepared, knowledgeable, and confident. So be on the lookout for our official launch announcement at gayswithkids.com and make sure you're following us on social media at gayswithkids.
You got itchy, dry, rashy skin? Need an ointment that'll give you relief? Pink Salve, P-I-N-X-A-V. Pink Salve soothes, heals, and protects your whole family's skin from eczema, chafing, and diaper rash too, and not to mention the acne. Support this LGBTQ plus women-owned family business, and it'll be the best rash decision you'll ever make. And if you go to pinksav.com, P-I-N-X-A-V.com, you can get 10% off your next order if you use Nola Papa. Get that keyword, Nola Papa. Pink Salve, y'all.
You know what, y'all? I'm going to have to tell you. Besides babies, one of my most favorite things that I have found to do that really makes me a better person is working out. And there's different forms of working out, okay? And someone that's like crossing their arms right now in the corner saying, I don't want to work out. Well, you don't have to. Just listen to me, okay? Because for me, in 2007, that's when I began. Listen here now. I started at Loyola, and I walked in, and I was like, dang, I'm fat. And I walked up there. I knew I wanted to change. I had my what are those ugly looking shoes that had the holes in the top? Crocs. Okay. I had my Crocs, but they were furry on the inside, and they had the fur on the top around, you know, the top of my foot. And I got up in there and I saw people running on the treadmill, and then I looked around and I was like, okay, I could do it. So with my Crocs on, my furry Crocs on, I stepped on the treadmill, and I'm running full throttle with my Crocs on. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, oh, dang, nobody's got Crocs on in this place. And I was looking, I was observing real big. All the people on the treadmills, no Crocs. Only me. This is your papa. I was like, oh, dang it. I got it. Okay, we're going to make it to the mile mark. By the mile mark, I was dead, okay, because I was just started. But anyway, you can go to the gym in Crocs. You can go to the gym until you just almost fall out on your face at a 1 mile point. To me, at 2007, it grew, the passion of working out grew all the way up until 2024. And, you know, finding your own strength is half the battle, okay? You have to know that you want to. And then when you do, everything else kind of falls into place. And with that said, we are welcoming a friend of mine from the gym, okay, from Anytime Fitness in the Garden District, because you know they got different ones. Well, this is from the Garden District. It's right off of CHOP, okay, right across from the Walmart, easy peasy to get to. And we have personal trainer Sean Prevost joining us today. He's about to call me on my cell phone. He is always there. He's always training. He's always helping. And if there's someone that's going to help us, you know, learn about our bodies and resolutions and such. Yep, that's him. That's him. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Eric.
Oh, I am so glad to talk to you. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you. Glad to talk to you.
You know, he literally, it's either him or Emily, the owner. She, like, when you walk in, it's the most friendly vibe, okay? And, you know, either he's in the office and he waves at you, remembering your name, okay? I don't mean to put the pressure on you. But usually he's real good with the names. And to see what Sean does around the facility is super cool, because from, I don't know if geriatric is the proper word to use, but from our older clientele to, you know, the college kids. And for I sure. bet even some high school kids. Do you get into high school too?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen around. It all, done it all.
All around. Yep. So I have questions, Sean. All right.
Yeah, what you got?
So I have wondered many a time when, because everybody, every time Dick and Harry has resolutions when the new year begins. Okay.
For sure.
But we live in a really, really hard place to keep the resolutions. I mean, you know, coming out of January 1st, you know, it's Mardi Gras.
That's right.
And the king cakes.
That's right.
I mean, and then you got the parades and then the booze. Like, okay, what happens, Sean, when you go in from December 31st thinking like you're Hulk or you're Wonder Woman, you know, you're ready for the new year, and then, you know, your posse brings in, like, you got Dumb Fung. You got my fave, Tartine. I don't know if you've tried the Tartine King Cake. It's delicious.
I have not.
It's so good. It's right off of Broadway. But, I mean, all these different places that really throw us off our path. How can we, as people that want to work out and better our bodies, how can we do that and have fun?
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad you phrase it that way, because it is a balance, right? And so the wonderful challenge with health and wellness is that I found is that most people are trying to make it a one-size-fits-all type thing, and or a one-and-done deal, right? And you're working on trying to change the way you live, right? And so the old saying, it's a marathon and it's not a sprint, right? And so in the beginning, it starts with just prioritizing, right? And figuring out where is this person at, right? In their journey. whether they're experienced, it's not their first time with the New Year's resolution fitness journey, or this is their first time trying it out and seeing if they can better themselves, right? And so just to backtrack a little bit, some of the common, let's just phrase it as mishaps I've seen from folks as far as to why we may fall off the wagon with our New Year's resolutions, poor time management, going into a total dietary overhaul and trying to change everything and not finding that balance. Oftentimes no structure. And then some of those resolutions are far too broad and they're not specific enough, right? And so from that point, it's often asking a person to find their why, right? Mm. And I'll ask them why as more times than a three-year-old toddler. Right. And so trying to figure out, okay, why are you here? What are you doing? What is your purpose? Right. And then allow them to put that out there, because there's no wrong answers as far as that. So it starts there. Right. And once we kind of determine what that why is, we need to kind of plan around it. Right. And so, look, we live in New Orleans. It's always a constant battle between festivals and different seasons as far as, hey, I wanna have my cake, literal cake, and eat it too, right? And so with that being said, it's trying to find that balance. So, okay, how often are you able to work out, right? How much time are you able to spend working out, right? Or have we planned for any setbacks? What are gonna be some of those obstacles that are going to get in your way, a certain habits that may get in your way, right? Not saying that we're going to just conquer them all there in that moment, but we want to kind of plan that they are going to come up and try to knock you off the wagon. And if we do fall off that wagon, we're planning to get back on.
I love that. And, you know, with making goals, I know for me, let's rewind it to 2007. If I, in my Crocs, my fuzzy Crocs, before I stepped on the treadmill, I thought, okay, I'm just starting this. I'm going to go 3 miles. Like, to me, making a realistic goal for the time that I am choosing to do it, like if I'm a beginner or intermediate or professional, like if I am in my fuzzy Crocs, I have no business running 3 miles. But, you know, let's say I did and I was, you know, I was stubborn and I got up on there and I ran 3 miles. Then my ankle or my bottom leg, I don't know what that's called, could start hurting. And then that gets in the way of tomorrow's workout and then the next day's workout, right? Wouldn't you say, a realistic goal?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. It's one of the big things I like to tackle when I'm first meeting with someone, when we have our quote unquote like fitness consultation, right? It's trying to establish, okay, like I said, what is your why? What are your goals, right? And we do want to make sure they are practical, they're reasonable, right? And so if you were to tell me, come in, Eric, you told me on day one, hey, Sean, I want to look like a fitness model. Okay. Fine. This is what traditionally it would take to get there, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, right? These 4 things we're going to focus on. But Eric, let me ask you, right? Are you able to prioritize these 4 things, right? And what I mean by that, you told me, you know, you have a family. You're working 6 days a week, 12-hour shifts, right? But you need to do 2 days in the gym for the next 3 months. Are you going to be able to do that, right? If that answer is no, then we may need to reevaluate your goals, right? And just figure out, where do they align with your life? When people are getting ready to start their journey, we're trying to be well and we're trying to take that and insert it into our life. The only problem is we don't get to remove anything to make room for what we're about to add on, right? And so we want to make sure that whatever your goals are, they kind of align with everything else you have going on with life. So you can make enough time to do whatever you need to do, whether that's making sure you have time to get into the gym, right? You have enough time to get through your workout. You have time to make good, healthy dietary changes, whatever that may be for you, right? In other words, we spend a lot of time talking about what causes friction in your life, and then where are places where we can remove friction with this wellness process.
I like that word, yeah, friction. In different areas of life, there's friction. Yes. And working out, friction, I like it, yes. Continue, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and I'll give you a prime example. If you were to tell me, I want to work out in the morning, right? I'm gonna do my workouts 3 days a week, 5:30 a.m. My first question would be to you, well, you consider yourself a morning person, right? Let's say the answer is yes, awesome, right? Well, where can we reduce friction in your life, right? Well, let's make sure that bag is packed, right? In the morning, the night before, let's make sure that you have maybe packed your pre-workout meal or drink, got the coffee maker set already. That's, you know, something that may save you 15 minutes in the morning, right? Less friction, less stress getting into your day. Allows you to get into your workout, stay focused, get that done, get out and move on, right? We're not building up that stress and letting it compound. We only have so much emotional equity to give in a day, right? And so if I'm gonna allocate 10% towards exercise, right? I need to make sure I'm putting myself in place to where I can give all 10% that I have towards that.
I love it. So when I want to ask about, you said, okay, they are morning person, 5 o'clock in the morning. That's scary to me. but flip the coin. What if you're not a morning person and it's hard for you to wake up? It's hard for you to get going. It's hard for you to get motivated. And then once you do find the motivation, it's time, you know, to start, you know, your work day or whatever. What do you say to the person that's a hard sleeper that still wants to work out?
Yeah, for sure. And we're trying to find, look, you have to meet that individual where they're at, right? Yes. And so then we just start to talk about life, right? I do ask when I'm meeting with someone, I tell everyone, I'm gonna open up, I'm gonna be vulnerable with you. I would love it if they would allow that opportunity to be vulnerable with me. And what I mean by that is, let's talk about your life a little bit, right? And take me through our accent, take me through a day to day. Let's go through the schedule, right? So you tell me you're not a morning person, fine. Let's see if we can find a pocket, right? Where you can work out consistently. And not saying that that's gonna work every single time. So we do it in two ways. One, let's see if we can start to target some areas in which you can fit exercise into your week schedule on a consistent or semi-consistent basis. And then we always want to try to plan for setbacks. And what I mean by that is, if what happens if you tell me, okay, I'm gonna work out 3 days a week at lunchtime, right? I work close to the gym, I can get over, work out, shower, awesome. But what happens if all of a sudden work has gotten in the way and I'm only making it to the gym one time a week, right? What happens then? So we want to plan for those setbacks and making sure that, okay, where are some of the other areas can we work out at any other times during the week? What other adjustments with your wellness plan that we need to make, whether dietary or as trying to be as efficient with your workouts? Maybe we'll focus on a full body routine, right? And also just the mental aspect of it, right? Not allowing you to beat yourself up because I said I was going to do three, I could only do two. Not allowing yourself to beat yourself up if I'm not hitting what we set as our original goal, right? Remembering that it is a marathon, it is not a sprint, right? Right now, next couple of weeks, we're only able to make one. Fine, we're still doing something, right? Let's keep going. When we get back to where we can do three, let's get back on.
Because that's so important because, I mean, if you optimistically look at it, you went twice. That is really good. You got out of the house. You got in your car, on your bike, on your feet. You got to the gym. You worked out twice. So if you hang up in your head about the things that aren't perfect, then, I mean, I don't mean to say that you're dead in the water, but you have to look at the wins, not the losses. You know what I mean? And working out is a win. The way you feel when you're done, that's a win. You know?
You are spot on. I don't think we celebrate our wins enough, and you should, right? Every little step forward you make in your journey, we should celebrate that. And
let me clarify the win, because a lot of times we feel like we won, so then we gonna go get a big old double cheeseburger and a milkshake. I mean, that's not the way you reward yourself. I'm just saying, you know, that's a win, and then you follow it up by a protein shake, right? Maybe.
Yes.
It depends on the person. Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah, and so we want to make sound dietary choices most of the time, right? We're just trying to build up pockets of consistency in your journey. Mm-hmm. That happens through many aspects as far as actual working outside, and then also on the dietary side, right? We want to try to continue to build up and just build up and build up with sound choice, sound choice, sound choice, sound choice. And that'll give you the ability to have that king cake, slice of king cake when you want it, right? Or maybe have that burger if you're out with your friends and stuff like that when you want to, right? We just don't want those moments to outweigh the moments when we're making sound good choices, right? We want to have balance, but like 70-30, 80-20, right? So 80% of the time, I'm trying to make a very good sound choice, but I do want to allot myself a couple of times, but yeah, I am going to have some fun, but not go overboard with it.
Like have a plan, not just willy-nilly.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Let's have a plan. Not saying it's always gonna be ideal, work out ideally for us, right? But we want to approach it with a plan of action, right? And and embrace it.
So we're in New Orleans. That's all good info. You guys, we are talking to Anytime Fitness trainer over at the Garden District, Sean Provost. Say it for me.
Good. Prevost.
Okay. And he is answering questions regarding, you know, working out, our resolutions, realistic resolutions. You know, I was talking in the beginning about New Orleans, and another thing that comes along with New Orleans is the booze.
Yes. Okay?
So how can we... I've actually kind of put it down. It's just too much. But, you know, how can someone that is working out religiously or maybe trying to figure out how they could get to working out a lot, but they still drinking too much? I say too much, but to them it might not be too much. I have heard that booze has a lot of sugar or whatever your body converts to. So then if you're drinking at night, it's just gonna go all sort of ways.
Yeah, it can add up on those calories pretty fast, right? Especially if we're having multiple beverages. Some of the struggle points with it is a lot of the mixers that people go with for different types of drink also helps compound on that. It always ties back to what is your why, right? And then how much are you willing to prioritize to get to your goals, right? And so accountability is a big factor. And so when I'm speaking with someone, it's my job to help try to get them to understand, hey, I'm gonna be in your support system. I'm gonna hold you accountable, but I also need you to hold yourself accountable as well, right? And so if you told me these are your goals, A, B, and C, but certain things are gonna come with it. We're not gonna say you can't drink, right? But we are going to try to figure out pockets where we can, where it is allowable and acceptable, right? And so if that is, if you were to, let's say, your plan was to designate, you know, Saturday nights, I like to go out on the town, have some fun with friends, family, whatever. That's when I'm going to probably have a couple beverages. Awesome. No problem. You know, but let's maybe keep it at a couple beverages, right? And it doesn't. And to not overindulge too much or too often, right? And so it does come to a point where that person has to kind of always just ask himself and remind himself, what is my why? I say this is what I want, what am I willing to do to achieve that, right? And so part of that's gonna be when you're out and having friends and fun and being social and saying, yeah, I'm gonna only have two cocktails tonight, right? And having that cutoff, drinking
slow. And
that's
accountability. You know what I mean? You said it perfectly, spot on, accountability. And if a person on their Saturday night, if you all is drunk as a skunk on a Saturday night and you can't cut yourself off, but you know you got to go to the gym on Monday, what you doing? What are you doing? That's accountability. Like, you have to know, okay, let me stop. I'm going to be a fool, you know?
Yes. Yes. It is part of the process. There is a segment that I think at times is lost with individuals where they have to hold themselves accountable to an extent, because no one's going to be with you all day long, right? Once you leave the gym, no one's in the kitchen with you when you're making those decisions to eat or when you walk up to the bar, right? And so it is up to you. And that's why it's a constant reminder. In the beginning, I know I keep harping on it, but I really like to focus on what is your why. I need you to believe this is what you're telling me. I need you to believe it wholeheartedly, right? Because that's going to be what you're going to have to go back to when it's the hard times, when you don't want it, when you do want to have a little bit more fun, right? Mm-hmm.
It really, knowing what the person wants out of this and how serious they are to get what they want. You know, wanting something and seriously wanting something is two different things. I want to pivot. This is something that's going to inevitably happen to all of us, but injuries, okay?
Yes.
And let's say you had a good workout on Thursday afternoon. You go to sleep Thursday night. You wake up. You cannot turn your head. You have a pinched nerve, a muscle that is just wild and out, but you're not able to function. All you can think about is pain. And those kind of injuries last a long time usually to get back to, you know, what you did on Thursday at the gym.
Yes.
So what do you say as a personal trainer, Sean, to the people that want to get back in there, but you cannot go back too soon?
Yep, you're right. I can speak from personal experience with this, and I'll maybe give that example shortly. But the first thing I have to preface it by saying that you always want to first get the okay from your physician, right, that you're able to return to the gym, right? Once you get that, now we can start talking about some things to ease into it, right? But as far as you had that injury, rest is going to be the first thing. Rest, rest, rest. If you have some kind of acute injury that happens right away, let's give it a couple of days just to see where you're at, right? And I'm not saying wait before going to a physician or anything, but just as far as you, as far as what's going on, right? But let's say you get the thumbs up from your physician, get back into the facility, coming up with a plan, right? And so part of that is preparing yourself, right? And figuring out what you can and can't do. If it's something where, as far as you want to start slow, so not just jumping head on going 100 miles per hour, so maybe starting off at 50% of what your max effort would normally be in a workout and just trying to get back into the groove of things. Get kind of learn what it feels like to exercise again, in a sense. Mm. So just sweat, get the heart rate up if possible, right? I often recommend to people that don't be afraid to branch out and like just keep an open mind, right? And I'll give a prime example. Last fall, I injured my left knee playing basketball. We playing a little recreational league. I injured my knee, and I was out for 4 months. I could not play basketball competitively. It drove me nuts, mm-hmm. right? But for me, I had to be creative as far as my workouts. I couldn't work out traditionally like how I once was, and so I had to come up with different workout plans as far as different ways for my upper body to challenge my upper body. And then once my leg got to a point where I could start to And what you were originally asking, Eric, once I could start to do some lower body routine stuff, I couldn't do the exact workouts I was doing before. Like, I could not hop on a leg press with a bunch of weight and just push it around. I had to be creative and do things that I knew was going to put me in a place to where I was not going to. I was really reducing my, the chances of me re-injuring myself. But I was still able to challenge those structures, right? In this case, my knee, to help to start to accelerate that process to start to get well, right? Mm. There will become a time where you don't want to avoid stress. We need some kind of stress there once it's getting better, right? Because we want to get it back and strong and working again, right? And then, as I tell everyone, listen to your body, listen to your body, listen to your body. It is the number one indicator as far as what's going on, right? When getting back into the gym, you may have some minor discomfort going on, right? You should expect that. Actually, that's okay. What we don't want is an extreme amount of discomfort or just some major acute pain, right? That's the red flags going off in your brain telling you stop, right? And so listen to your body. It will tell you what is going on. And that's where it goes back to as far as keeping an open mind, right? If those red flags go off saying, ooh, this just doesn't feel right, but guess what? It probably isn't right. Go ahead and stop, pivot. Let's do another exercise, target another body part, right? It may not be ready for that yet.
Your intuition, yes. And like, and listening into our bodies, I wanna say, you talked about your injury. I wanna talk about my injury in July.
Yes, let's do it.
I slept wrong on, I guess, my neck, and my head, mm-hmm. I guess, was pressed up against the headboard, and I woke up to my left shoulder / neck in excruciating pain, and I've had a pinched nerve because of a pillow situation before. This was unlike anything, and it started from my shoulder, and then started pulsating like my arm had fallen asleep in a like serious sort of way, and it was almost electricity. And as days and weeks went by, it started pushing down towards the tips of my fingers, like my hand was in a socket or something. And it lasted from July until literally last month. I don't know why it decided to go away, but it was like, look, I have been on you for a long time. I'm gonna peace out now. But it still kind of pulsates a little bit, but it's definitely manageable. I'm able to start my push-ups again. But Sean, I feel like I'm literally starting back at square one.
Yeah. And that's the battle, the mental hurdle when coming back from injury. You'll see it a lot with athletes. If they're a particular injury in the sport, a way they got injured, they may avoid that same type of action as fear that it may happen again, right? And so that mental hurdle getting back where I want to go all out, I want to get back to where I once was. Sometimes the body doesn't let us. That's where that keeping that open mind comes in and saying, okay, one, if it feels fine for you to do push-ups, right, and it's not causing any discomfort and stuff, right, this is what we're assuming here, then working in that certain range of motion that you are comfortable with to start, right? So maybe finding what ranges of motion you're able to do that movement pattern that's not causing any discomfort, and slowly working it up that way, right, and building it up. And then if you're able, some of the other body parts, if you're able to put a little bit more fun stress on those areas, right? And so if it's not compromising that arm and neck region, some lower body routine stuff where you can push a little harder down there, right? Because we don't have any dysfunctions going on, right? So maybe, and that's why I mean, by keeping open mind, trying different types of workouts where we can take advantage and maybe challenge some other areas of the body that we still can target, right? And so in your case, maybe more core routines that we can ramp up the intensity, or lower body routines, right? And slowly build up on the upper body, not going overboard there, not being too aggressive with that, and just allowing that to slowly build up while allowing you to kind of get that mental satisfaction of, I got a real good, strong workout in, by focusing on other areas you know you can tax a little bit more.
Definitely. And you know what I did? I did that. I'm doing that. I just started, you know, dabbling in and working out like physically, but I stopped eating late at night because I knew I can't work out like I used to. So
that's a great
trim the fat.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Yeah, so great point, right? Remember I mentioned earlier with the New Year's resolution, we need to plan for setbacks. Well, injuries are one of those types of setbacks you can face. And so what do we need to do? We have to attack the plan from a whole different way. And that's a perfect one you mentioned, Eric, as far as, sure, I'm not able to exercise in the way I once was. I had to take a prolonged break for a while. Where can I make other changes in my wellness plan to kind of make sure I'm mitigating any type of further setbacks, right? One of the main places is some dietary changes, right? So it may require you to be a little bit, if it's someone that's on a journey to maybe lose fat, right? It may require them to have to be a little bit more strict on their dietary guidelines, mm-hmm. right? To adjust for the fact they won't be getting as much physical activity in. Which then is a case of, now we need to sit down and talk, right? You have to kind of talk with yourself and figure out, what does that mean, right? And how am I able to do that without it feeling like it's going to give me a lot of, it's going to bring a lot of friction.
You hear, he said it again, he said friction. This man, he is full of all the tips. Friction. I love using that word, and I haven't thought of it before, Sean. The wealth of knowledge that is so important for all of us to hear. I mean, you know, I can't stress it enough how much fun is not really, I guess, fun. I think so much when I'm running on the treadmill and like the next blog I'm going to write. Everything I've written was on my phone, everything, because that's where I do it. I think that the endorphins and stuff are like, you know, really going hardcore. So everything, every blog, pretty much every the books, all at the gym. And once you get and you tap into your own potential, then there are other people, other helpers, other professionals like Sean and Emily and the whole staff at Anytime Fitness. They're all there to be able to help you and make a realistic plan. Because you can't go in and be like, yeah, I want to be a fitness model. And like, yeah, you kind of do want to do that, but like, let's be realistic about it. And then being cognizant of our lifestyle. Sean, thank you so much for coming in. I wanna ask you, so if people wanna find out more about y'all, how can they find out?
Yes. You can reach us at our website, Anytime Fitness Garden District. You can just Google that. It will take you straight to the page, right? And then you can reach us on our social media platforms as well. So Instagram, Anytime Fitness Garden District as well. Facebook is the same, Anytime Fitness Garden District. And Eric, I have a little update for you, if you don't mind.
I love it.
So
yes.
we've extended our fitness family of sorts, and yes. So we have some other Anytime Fitness locations in our family, and so they, if you don't mind, there are a couple others you can find us.
Where?
So not only Anytime Fitness Garden District, but Anytime Fitness Gentilly, Anytime Fitness Algiers,
what,
and Anytime Fitness Marrero. We're one big happy family of four. You'll get that same support across the board from all four. Just put in those names for our social media platforms, Anytime Fitness Garden District or Gentilly, Algiers, Marrero. You'll be able to see what we have to offer.
Look at the growth. It's like a garden. It's like a garden of workout flowers. Wow, that's so cool. And like, if y'all have your own questions about, you know, beginning your journey, hit Sean up. You can go to their website or go to their Instagram, and you will, if you want to, you have like, you'll be able to be linked up to either Emily or someone like Sean, and they'll get you in there and have a consultation and get your own plan going.
And if you don't mind, they can even reach out to me through my social media platform, which is simple, Sean P504. So S-E-A-N P504.
You can't get easier than that. I mean, I love talking about this, if you can't tell. So I really appreciate I really appreciate y'all coming on and and allowing us to know that we can still have hope even if we fall off that wagon, you know?
Yes, right? yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. Hey, this has been a pleasure. It's an honor to be a part of the Papa Podcast.
That's right. Thank you, Sean. And like I always say, from our families to your family and to the Anytime Fitness family, we send you NOLA love.
Yes, thank you.
I love it.
You got itchy, dry, rashy skin? Need an ointment that'll give you relief? Pink Salve, P-I-N-X-A-V, Pink Salve, soothes, heals, and protects your whole family's skin from eczema, chafing, and diaper rash too, and not to mention the acne. Support this LGBTQ plus women-owned family business, and it'll be the best rash decision you'll ever make. And if you go to pinksav.com, P-I-N-X-A-V.com, you can get 10% off your next order if you use NOLA Papa. Get that keyword, NOLA Papa. Pink Sav, y'all.
Are you ready to embark on a magical journey with your family? Look no further. Welcome to Sandpiper Vacations, where we specialize in crafting unforgettable experiences for LGBTQ plus families. Whether you are dreaming of a relaxing cruise, an all-inclusive resort, or the tropical islands of Hawaii, we've got you covered. Our gay-owned and operated travel agency is dedicated to creating inclusive and memorable experiences for families just like yours. Picture this, a stress-free vacation where every detail is taken care of. That's what we're here for. At Sandpiper Vacations, we understand the unique needs and desires of LGBTQ plus families, and we've curated the perfect destinations just for you. Our planning services are completely free and designed to make your vacation planning as hassle-free as possible. So why stress over planning when you can leave it up to the experts? Let Sandpiper Vacations turn your travel dreams into reality. Visit our website at sandpipervacations.com or give us a call or shoot us a text at 614-407-3232.
Ooh, y'all, it takes a village to make this show happen. And it definitely couldn't happen without the generous pockets from our family of sponsors like Ochsner Hospital for Children, Ochsner.org, Rouse's Markets, Pink Salve Diaper Rash Cream at pinksav.com, Sandpiper Vacations at sandpipervacations.com, Comfort Cases, find them at comfortcases.org, New Orleans Ice Cream Company, find them at neworleansicecream.com, Real Estate with Steph, find her over at realestatewithsteph.com. Our beloved Audubon Institute, find them at audubininstitute.org. Kids Dream Dress Boutique, find them at kidsdreamus.com. And Zach George and his dog training revolution, find him on YouTube. Our partners like gayswithkids.com and all the others that help, but we cannot forget our show's director and editor and knower of all digital things, Adrian over at Ice Media. And of course, we can't forget y'all. Thank you so much for listening. We couldn't have it without you. And if you know anyone that would like to become a partner with NOLAPAPA.com, you can send them to Eric at NOLAPAPA.com. Shoot me an email. and I'll shoot it right back, baby. Until then, NOLA love.